Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today, we are strapping in for what might be the most audacious deep dive we've ever taken.
I think you might be right.
We are tackling a world classic, the Tao Te Ching, the foundational text of Taoism. But with this massive controversial caveat that our sources bring to the table, we're not just reading it, we're confronting a claim that the entire world has, well, fundamentally misunderstood it for millennia.
Sounds like an exaggeration, I know, but the arguments laid out in the material, they're surprisingly rigorous. Our mission today is really to explore this quiet challenge that's been leveled against global academia.
Right.
The assertion is that the vast majority of people simply do not know the true original meaning of the Tao Te Ching.
So our job is to figure out why.
Exactly. Why this sacred text might have been corrupted, and then we have to introduce this radical alternative lens, a concept called katakamuna, which, and this is the key, claims to be the only way to reveal its true essential blueprint.
That is heavy. And the sources themselves are not shy about it at all. They call this an intellectual revolution.
We do.
One designed to prove that the established interpretations, you know, the ones taught in basically every philosophy department on Earth, are based not on truth, but on logical compromise. It's a huge rejection of established thought.
It really is.
Yeah.
What makes this such an immense intellectual provocation is the text itself. I mean, if we were discussing some obscure ancient pamphlet, nobody would really care.
Sure.
But this is the Tao Te Ching, the Tao Te Ching. So I think we have to start by just grasping the sheer magnitude of its global footprint.
Right. Let's unpack that influence just to emphasize how much weight this critique actually carries. I mean, it is widely regarded as one of the most translated books in the world.
Second only to the Bible.
Second only to the Bible. That level of reach means its ideas are, you know, they're embedded in our global consciousness.
And you just can't overstate its role in academia.
Yeah.
It's treated as a major text in, well, in virtually all university courses on philosophy, religious studies, Asian studies.
Mm-hmm. It's foundational.
It's the benchmark for discussing the universality of human thought. The way we understand Lao Tzu's work is fundamental to the entire study in the East.
And its concepts didn't just stay stuck in some ivory tower, did they? We've seen these ideas just profoundly impacting our modern world.
Oh, absolutely. The corporate and psychological landscapes, for example.
Yeah, take the concept of Wu Wei.
Wu Wei, right. Often translated as non-action.
Which sounds so passive.
It does, but its modern application is anything but. It has profoundly impacted, say, Silicon Valley business philosophies. It emphasizes avoiding excessive effort or control.
So not fighting against the flow of natural forces or market momentum.
Precisely. It's about effective inertia, you know, knowing when to step back and let the system run itself. That's totally counterintuitive to the traditional Western command and control model.
So instead of micromanaging, you harmonize with the system. Mm-hmm. And on a personal level, its influence is everywhere in the whole pursuit of well-being.
Totally. Concepts like self-acceptance and mental balance, you can draw a direct line from those to modern mindfulness and meditation practices.
Okay, so we have this text that influences global philosophy, how we run our companies, our own mental health.
Right, and now here's the turn. The source material asserts that our reliance on these common sense, easy interpretations is the very fixed idea that distances us from true knowledge.
Wow. So the argument is that our familiarity with it is actually the problem.
That's the devastating critique. Your familiarity is the very thing preventing you from understanding it.
But hold on a second. The sources use some pretty strong language calling the established interpretations shallow, even childish. I mean, isn't that inherently a bit arrogant? How do they defend such an aggressive stance?
Their defense lies in what they call the structural problem of the text. They argue that's what led to the contamination.
A structural problem.
Yes. They claim that almost all of the 81 verses of the Tao Te Ching have this dual structure. It has a short, crucial, almost ineffable essence, and then it has a secondary, descriptive, concrete section.
So you have the pure blueprint, and then you have the explanatory notes next to it.
Exactly. And the tragic obscuring of meaning over thousands of years happened when later thinkers and scholars tried to be helpful.
Uh-oh.
They took that ineffable essence, that deep, profound core, and they tried to translate it into, you know, easy to understand behavioral advice and flowery rhetoric.
They tried to make the ultimate truth instantly relatable.
And in doing that, by focusing on the easy to understand part, they effectively lost the original blueprint entirely. It just became a book of philosophical self-help.
Not a map of the universe.
That is the core consequence. The source material calls this an essenceless teaching, or lousy in name, but not in spirit.
So if you strip away that precise logical core and just replace it with ethical guidance,
right,
you've compromised the entire text.
You've lost the blueprint. And the only way to recover it, they argue, is with a transparent logical lens that doesn't rely on all that historical human compromise.
Okay, so if simplification was the tragedy, what's the solution? The anti-simplification. What kind of rigorous logical framework can undo thousands of years of this rhetorical compromise?
Well, this is where it gets really interesting.
This is where we get to Katakomuna.
Yes. And we really need to spend a moment defining this, because this isn't just another philosophical school of thought.
Right.
According to our sources, Katakomuna is a system that defines the pre-linguistic principles of the universe through two essential elements. Sound, which is equated with energy.
Okay, sound is energy.
And geometry, which corresponds to form.
Sound and geometry. Now, pre-linguistic, that means before human language started imposing all its fixed ideas, right? But I'm still struggling with the connection here. For most of us, this sounds incredibly esoteric. How can sound and geometry logically define a complex philosophical concept like the Tao?
Okay, think of it like this. The universe, before it actually manifests into objects or, you know, concepts we can name, exists as pure potential.
Pure potential. Got it.
The Katakomuna system provides a logical structure for that potential. Sound, or energy, represents the unmanifested, state-pure, formless potential. Kind of like the wave function in quantum mechanics.
Okay.
And geometry, or form, represents the moment that potential collapses into a recognizable structure. The particle, the thing, the manifest reality.
Ah, I see. So it's a system of logic based on fundamental universal structure, not human ethics. It's trying to be almost scientific, not rhetorical.
Exactly. And within that system, there are two critical terms we need for decoding the Tao Te Ching, AMA and Kamyu.
AMA and Kamyu.
You can think of AMA as the ultimate latent world, the sky, heaven pure, infinite potential that is completely unobservable.
Mm.
Kamyu is the source layer of the phenomenal world. It's the immediate potential just before it manifests. It's the potential that is, let's say, ready to become reality.
Okay, so AMA is potential infinity, and Kamyu is the imminent source of reality. So if we accept this framework, the whole goal is to use this systematic logic to just strip away all that historical contamination.
And calmly overturn what the source calls the shallow childish interpretations with just uncompromising logic.
Wow.
The authors argue that this framework restores the text as an ultimate blueprint, not just a moral guide. And to show how, we have to apply it.
Let's do it.
Our sources give us one key phrase that they say perfectly embodies this dual structure and the logic of Katakomuna.
And that phrase is, mysterious and yet more mysterious, the gate of all wonders.
Exactly.
Now, when I first read that in college, the common interpretation was that this was just beautiful, poetic flourish, you know, suggesting endless, overwhelming awe at the mystery of existence.
And that's the compromise. That's the easy, relatable answer. But the Katakomuna lens doesn't really allow for poetic flourish. It demands precision.
Oh.
So let's look at the first concept. Mysterious and yet more mysterious. The sources state this is not an expression of awe. It's a definition of location.
A definition of location.
Yes. Under Katakomuna deciphering, this entire phrase is mapped to the latent world. It specifically involves those AMA and Kamyu layers we just defined.
Oh, wow.
It means the ultimate profound principle that lies further beyond exploration. And crucially, the sources clarify that the first mysterious points specifically to Kamyu, that imminent source layer.
And the yet more mysterious.
That points deeper into AMA.
So when I read mysterious and yet more mysterious, Lousy wasn't being poetic. He was charting a map of reality. He was differentiating between two specific structured levels of unmanifested existence.
Right.
That is a massive shift in intellectual category.
It's a complete structural overhaul.
Yeah.
And now for the second part of the phrase, the gate of all wonders. Traditionally, that's seen as, you know, the doorway to enlightenment or some deep truth.
And under the rigorous Katakomuna lens.
It is deciphered not as a metaphor, but as pure intuition.
Pure intuition. That's very specific. How does that connect the dots?
So the meaning is defined as the source, the entrance, from which all creativity or subtle phenomena emerge. Think of it as the singularity, where those two ultimate layers, AMA and Kamyu, must intersect to create the manifest world.
I see.
Pure intuition, in this sense, is the logical mechanism, the gate, that allows the blueprint to move from potential into actual reality.
So if you look at those two definitions side by side, the common poetic one versus the specific logical system defining levels of latency and their intersection point, you see the core tension immediately. Islauzi was describing this highly technical physics of existence, then scholars trying to make it easy to understand thousands of years ago, they would have failed miserably.
They didn't fail in providing a beautiful ethical guide, maybe, but they failed in conveying the original structure. They took the complexity out, and that deep, complex, layered meaning is what was missed. The logical framework, according to this analysis, reveals Lousy was describing an ultimate universal blueprint that required a precise language.
Which Katakamuna claims to be.
Precisely.
So what does this all mean for us, for you listening today? We started this by calling it an intellectual revolution. How does applying an ancient logical system to an ancient Chinese text become a modern revolution?
Well, the author, Jinko, is very clear that this analysis is not some humble contribution to existing academia. It is an act of intellectual revolution.
A cool logical proof.
Coolly proving that established, universally accepted interpretations are based on, well, misunderstanding and logical compromise. They're essentially saying that Western academia and popular philosophy have been building on a compromised foundation.
That is a huge claim. But the application for you listening is clear then. This intellectual quest is presented as a vital step for you to distinguish what the sources call truly valuable knowledge from obsolete information.
And that ability to differentiate, that's the key takeaway. If you accept the Katakamuna premise, even just for a moment, you are forced to reevaluate what you thought you knew about one of the world's most influential texts.
It forces you to ask new questions.
It allows you to leap into your own world of creation, built on a foundation of what they call true, rigorous knowledge, rather than that compromised, easy rhetoric. It compels you to ask, what else am I taking for granted?
It makes you question the very sources of accepted wisdom, and that is exactly the kind of friction we need in an intellectual deep dive.
And if we connect this to the bigger picture, this raises an important question for you to consider. If a text as universally recognized as the Tao Te Ching has been fundamentally misunderstood for centuries because of an initial logical compromise, this desire to make the ineffable accessible,
right,
then what other universally accepted truths in philosophy or science or culture might just be waiting for a new, rigorous logical lens, like this system based on sound and geometry, to come along and reveal their true, uncompromising blueprint?
That is a phenomenal thought to end on. The power of re-examining foundational texts through entirely new logical structures is just staggering. It forces us to admit that what we think of as historical compromise might actually be historical contamination. Thank you for guiding us through this intellectual revolution today.